GPS to love. Each day in salutation, I keep passion's promise and walk the coast of Clare with you, hand in hand with you. New, fresh, startling love on the eternal road between your calm ocean and the great Clint of my soul. It's great to be here. I'm really happy to be here tonight, and I can't say enough about O'Vale. And I know Paul Casey was mentioned there earlier on. Last time for the man, he's done a great job. I think it's probably one of the best open mic nights in the country. Or probably the best.
And the world.
And I would say if it wasn't for O'Vale, I probably wouldn't have kept writing, and the encouragement that I got here after inflicting my writing on an awful lot of audience down through the years has been great. So here we go. Here's three poems that were published in the Coventry Twinning book this year. Christina won. I watched as you walked in. You were more beautiful than your portrait. I am love, you whispered. I am love. I am love. I am love. You whispered with your eyes. And together we sung harmonies unsung. You, a she fairy, whispered with your eyes. And I, a wordsmith without a tongue. You left early to catch a red eye and hinted that you might return. But you left a memory scar. And all week long, I played with sticks and leaves on your body. Since you left, I dreamt of rats and fish and squadrons of spaceships in endless numbers, grey and suspended, moving slow and silent, eternally passing. And of you, stretched naked on a beach of damp cobbles beneath dark clouds, and I scrawling love with a mud-tipped stick on your body. Yeah. Word came that you were out, and like-minded souls joked about my obsession. But it hasn't faded, and you emerge once again to show me your ego, to show me deafness of pen. But I love you not for your poetry. What good is poetry to me? But for your form, and to listen to the alliteration of heart trembles when your name is mentioned, and my mind your portrait conjures. Fine-featured, silken, platinum doll, close-woven fabric of life without curse or stain. But how can I tell for sure from one fleeting glance? Shimmering, silken, lover of the moon. Of course, not all poems are love poems. Some poems are lust poems.
No.
And sometimes you think you're writing a love poem, but you realise it's a lust poem when you sober up. This is one of these. I woke at 6 after 3 hours sleep and 8 pints of stout. With a horn for you and a terrible taste in my mouth. Garrettstown. I walked the beach and out along the cliff where we first kissed on that bright October afternoon. But the place where we sat had disappeared, undercut and eroded and fallen into a turbulent sea. Drunk on you, I kicked the wind and grasped the swirling sand. Whispering particles of you melted with salt sea spray on my tongue.
Good man.
Last night, my daughter asked me about a joke her mother had told her. She didn't get it, she said. That's an old joke, I said. One I told your mother way back before you were born. Way back, I thought, when she used to laugh at my jokes. The good road. After a belly full of guji berries and mung beans, she reclined in the passenger seat to align her chakras somewhere around Monaster Evan. I never know where I am on that good road. As the announcer read some text just in to take us up to the Angelas. When you go, she said, leave your heart in the rubble. And I wondered, could I meditate while driving or would I wreck the car? Look at these pages. Yeah. Sorry, no, with this. The Bureau. It's there hanging off a brass hook, made from unadorned white deal. It's bare wood, just as I like it. Rectangular slots made to measure for envelopes and highlighters, and an add-on of shelves for stapler, staples, paper clips and a punch. Made without ruler pencil, cut rough with Sandvik, 6 teeth per inch across the chair, dust falling to the floor, glued and nailed with the inch and a half ovals, points tapped a blunt on the kitchen tile. "Aren't you going to paint it?" she asks. And before I can reply, "You never finish anything." Ticket. Today I found a ticket that you bought. Date, time, seat number, and a light blue stripe down one side. Not selected, it reads, whatever that means. I touch where you had touched, and the memory of you returns, laughing, searching for your glasses, buttoning up your coat to leave. These are two longer pieces. One is from my father. Throughout the whole of his life, my father had remained in constant conversation with the dogs of the town, with the river, with the willy wagtails, with the swifts, with wild horses, with the crows nesting high up in the rookery above the town, clatters of them returning home early when rain was due. He would often stand in our backyard and surmise as to the stories they might be telling as they clattered incessantly high above the house. He could see the beauty in their blue metallic wings and the grace in their flight, and like them would wish he could take off from some high perch and soar high above the town and follow the bog of mash, get caught on an updraft and gently let it take him, or fly upstream and rise with the ground to the mass rock until he could see the breadth of 5 counties, or drift like a feather back down to the cottage that nestles at the foot of the mountain and dream of apple orchards, damsons, gooseberry bushes and climbing roses. Later, when the woman walked through me, I would dream that, like him, I talked to crows, and the crows talked back. Mother. I know my mother. I know my mother is fluttering high in the whispering pine trees that line Acres Lake. Maybe from time to time she comes down and rests on one of the benches and watches the tennis players on the court or the children playing on the swings, the young parents, the boaters, the fishermen on the jetty, the ducks. And maybe a crow flies gracefully out from the rookery above the town and goes beyond the brown, gurgling, breaking river and drops his story into the lake and perches on the high mesh fence that surrounds the tennis courts and preens his beautiful metallic blue feathers and chats and laughs with her until the day brightens and they both soar, her white and wispy, crow dark and handsome with one grey eye, out over acres, and drop stories of the town, stories of Arigna, of Iron Mountain, of Cardinabrack, of Roscarvan and Ranthogue, of High Street, of America, of the past. Stories that will break the lake's surface and plunge into the bottomless hole that the sea is at its core. Stories that will never sink to the bottom, but never resurface either. Lost stories, lost forever to you and me in the brown water of the lake. And this is a poem for my daughter. There's been a lot of there's a lot of poetry read, obviously, in Ovale, but I think it has also spawned a lot of collaborations, and there's a lot of different things that have come out of Ovale. And one of them is a collaboration with myself and Colin Scully, and we made a film out of this, from this poem. A day out. The sun shone, but it wasn't warm when we got the taxi from Houston. It reminded me of September days, long before you were a twinkle, as you'd say yourself. You who invented tidgies and resisted shackles like a true Irish hero, though still only 5. On the train, you drew a locket on a page and asked me how they were made. And were the fairies or angels that sat at the foot of O'Connell? And you wondered how they built the spire and asked, were some fairies shy and did fairies fly in the rain? The taxi man said he had a handier route, and I wondered would he screw us and look for bullet holes in the forecourts and ghosts of Collins' spies in the castle. I wanted to look at the paintings on the railings, but you wanted to hunt for horse chestnuts in the green and play on the slides and swings. We sat on a bench, you curled on my lap, tired from the early start, and we threw money in the fountain, and you said, if 2 coins touched, we could make a wish. Oh. The next piece is, it's a longer, it's a story or a vignette, so you can settle back into this for a few minutes. After Mass, somebody's golden retriever with the brown collar was jumping up at the window in the kitchen. trying to eat a bluebottle. Growling with head lowered, the dog would step back, then pounce at the window open mouth. With his paws on the low sill, he'd snap sideways at the fly, buzzing and banging off the glass. Music was coming from the front bar, and the potatoes were boiling on the back ring. Pat Gilmartin was standing at the cooker with a cigarette dangling from his mouth, bowron in hand. He wore a black leather waistcoat, black beard and black glasses. He moved the carrots off to one side to warm the bowron. He was leaning back and squinting to avoid the smoke, breathing through the corner of his mouth and blowing the smoke away from his eyes with forced air from flared nostrils. Holding the bowron upside down, he rubbed the goat skin in circular motion while warming it over the flame. The frustrated Labrador barked up at the fly. Spews of steam lifted and dropped the lid off the potatoes. Steam was condensing on the window. The bar was jammed. In the bar, the musician sat under the window with a table covered with full and empty glasses in front of them and banged out, "The chicken's gone to Scotland." Ashtrays overflowed and a fog of smoke clung to the ceiling. The two brothers and the Protestant stood with elbows on the high counter at one end, their usual spot. The brother with the waistcoat and the hat had left in Rhubarb during the week. An old man with black-rimmed glasses and a black coat sat in a high stool with his back to the wall drinking whiskey at the other end, his usual spot. He left Mass early to be the first in. In between, the heads and hands clamoured for stout and chatted and shouted over the music. John Mulvey stood pressed with his back to the door, gripping his pint tight to his chest. The Welt was itching to sing, and the tinker with the cravat and polio limp waited for his turn to play the tin whistle. Behind the bar, pounds were taken, the till rang and change was returned. Glasses were ploshed and washed in cold water on the spot and reused. Pints were lined up in a row ready for the heads to be put on them. And steam rose from the boiling kettle for the awkward bastard at the hatch that wanted a hot whiskey. The middle of June. It's for herself, she's not 100. That old summer cold is hard, shook. Jesus wept. Empty glasses clinked as they were collected by handfuls, and full bottles sighed as their caps were prized off. The optics gurgled and a blue beer cooler beneath the counter and a beer crate and a tangle of pipes hummed to the demand. An old laundry basket filled steadily with empty bottles that clinked as they were dropped in on top of other. The old man goaded his son-in-law with round cheeks to sing, and the son-in-law started to sing a love song.
As we gather in the chapel here in old Romanian jail, I think about these past few weeks.
People jostled and stretched and turned to see the singer, and those who didn't or were too short waited patiently listening. And the volume of the chatter dropped, and there was the sound of someone slowly gulping their first fresh mouthfuls.
From us, they have told us we must yearn for liberty. Yet all I want in this dark place is to have you here.
Someone gave out a scolding shh to kill the final mumbles of intense conversation of the cheek-to-cheek brothers discussing the merits of a mare they wanted to buy. They both chuckled the same way and went beefy red behind their pints. The glass washing and till ringing stopped, and pints were supped quietly or not supped at all.
Oh, Grace, just hold in your arms and let this moment linger. They'll take me out at dawn and I will die. With all my love, I place this wedding ring upon your finger. There won't be time to share our love, for we must say goodbye.
John Mulvey straightened himself, lowered his pint, closed his eyes, put out his chest, and his neck tingled as the singer's voice lowered.
Now I know it's hard for you, my love, to ever understand. The love I bear for these brave men, my lover, the state of land.
Others blew slowly upward, long drafts of smoke, and vacantly watched as it swirled and began to fray. Some looked studiously downward or took extra long to crush on their soul a cigarette butt. And some just picked an imaginary spot on the ceiling and stood savouring every word. And in the stillness, my mother snuck away to prod the roast and check the marifat peas, the potatoes and the carrots. Gilmartin never put the carrots back and they were only half done. That bollocks and his effing bowron. The love song wafted into the kitchen.
But when Paul called me to his side down in the GPO, I had to leave my own success to him I had.
She continued prodding the roast with a big timber-handled fork, and the smell escaped from the oven as the big, useless lug of a Labrador salivated at her shoulder. In the bar, in the silence of the song, the stout suppers could get the smell of lamb being roasted. Then there was a loud cheer and a clap as the man with the round cheeks closed his eyes, jerked his head to beat time, and finish with all he could muster.
There won't be time to share our love, or we must say goodbye.
Then he reached for his pint, and his father-in-law wiped under his glasses and blew his nose loudly with a loose handkerchief that he had pulled by one corner from his top-coat pocket. The brother with the hat went to bless himself, and the musicians under the window burst forth once more to hoops and cheers and another applause, and the till rang and pints were gulped. Then, Guard Ryan, in full uniform, appeared in the door, glaring at the musicians to stop. But they cut straight into another faster tune, The Woman of the House, and a loud cheer went up. That's the gangly fucker, that fella. Aye, look at the head on him, and an eye on him like a goat hitting cabbage. Ryan stood in the doorway until everyone drank up and left. Thank you.